And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Bracket Rundown, coming to you live here Thursday, January 28th. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Joining us is the number one rated puppet in all of college basketball, David Griggs. David, how are you doing tonight?
I am. I am the most relevant, the smartest puppet. No other puppet's doing this or as good as I am.
Correct. Also joining us back again is John Stalica. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing quite well tonight.
Now, we've got, before we get into our bracket rundown show, we want to take a few moments here to follow up on last night's Under the Radar podcast. David, we started something last night. We want to keep it going here. We are very serious about this. Could you fill everybody in on what they should be doing?
Well, what it is the Grand Canyon Antelopes are a transitional program, and therefore they are ineligible for postseason play, even though they're averaging about 5,000-6,000 fans a game, and they're having a historic season, and they're receiving votes in the top 25, and they're in first place. So, you know, we've been tweeting at the NCAA, and to get them to give the Lopes a waiver, and I started to get the feeling, and I think you did too, that the NCAA was ignoring us. I mean, did you kind of get that feeling?
They weren't responding at all.
Yeah, they weren't.
And no waiver had been granted, so yeah.
Yeah, I think they were ignoring us. So what we're doing now is that we are petitioning the President of the United States to give a presidential decree giving the Lopes a waiver and allowing them to play in the NCAA tournament. We have the petition online. We need our goal is 100,000 signatures. We have 99,960 to go. Great progress today, but you need to log on and sign our petition. It'll be linked in the article. It should be linked down there.
Yeah. Look right up there. It should be linked up there. You can scroll down to our Under the Radar podcast down there also.
Right.
You'll be able to see it. But everybody, if you have not voted yet, get out there, vote. Get out there, sign the petition. The Lopes need the waiver, and we're calling upon Barack Obama to give it to us.
Right.
And friends up north say vote early and vote often.
Yes, and we encourage you to do that here as well. Vote early and vote often. Vote as many times as you would like. Sign it 10 times if you
don't. Oh, now let's play by the rules. You're only allowed to sign it once, but get your friends, get your family members, get your neighbor, get your dog, get your puppet, get everybody to sign it.
Yes. If you have multiple personalities, make sure they all sign it. And again, once this goes through, I mean, this goes straight to the president. I'm assuming it's on whitehouse.gov. I mean, I'm assuming he checks it every morning. He probably saw it this morning. So it's definitely on his radar, and we intend to have him on our show toward the end of February, don't we, Chad?
Yes, as soon as we get this, as soon as the Lopes get the waiver, when the WAC announces that they will be in the WAC tournament, we're going to have him on here. We're going to be doing a little WAC tournament preview with the president.
Yeah, President Obama.
We may also be talking some Southland hoops with him, you know, maybe a little bit of MEAC, a lot of under-the-radar conferences. He's a huge basketball fan. We know that.
Right. He fills out the bracket every year. So, I mean, naturally, he'll want to come on our show.
Absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But let's get right into today's program, which is our bracket rundown show. This is the show where we do what a lot of the bracketologists out there create these brackets that they put out there. They don't really show you how they get there. They just tell you these are the teams and these are where they're seated. We're going to kind of show you here how they do that. I was watching one of the games tonight, and there was a comment about, well, if I think it was Maryland with the win over Iowa. Well, Joe Lenardi says that Maryland's now a 2 seed. Well, we're going to look at it and see if they are a 2 seed and how somebody might think they are and how we actually arrive at where they are on the seed list. We will build a seed list right here on the air. We'll have it bracketed. Don't go down and look at it yet, but right down below us here will be the bracket that you can look at after the show as well.
And just to reiterate, what a lot of bracketologists do is that they'll try and guess what they think the real committee is going to do. We have someone that does that, John Tytel. Unfortunately, he can't be with us tonight due to a conflict. But we're on this particular program, we're not really worried about guessing the actual committee.
No, we are saying what we feel is where we feel the team should be.
Yeah.
The way it will work, like I said in the last couple of weeks, is David and John will both tell me who they think belongs where on the list. I will act as the arbiter when they do not agree. If they do agree, the team goes in. And when I think they're completely both insane, then I may throw a few of my own comments in here and there.
Okay.
On that note, let's go ahead and pull the list up here. Maybe. Maybe not.
This is fantastic television.
Okay, we're working on this, folks. Here we go. Now, as we try again.
Yeah. I mean, again, it just doesn't get any better than this.
Okay, it should be coming up any second now.
Well, there it is. All right, it's actually... All right.
There it is. Now we've got right there the list of 1 through 68. We're really just going to be building out through the end of the at-large teams, the first four, discussing some teams that just missed it, and then I'll be filling in the rest of them at the end of the show. But why don't we get right into it? John, let me start with you. Who is the number one team overall in the nation right now?
Yeah, it's still going to reside in the state of Oklahoma, and I'm not talking about Tulsa, talking about Boomer Sooner.
Oral Roberts. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, Oklahoma. Okay. David, do you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. That was fairly easy. If we do it this easy, we'll be done in about 5 minutes here.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, number one overall. David, let me stick with you. Who is number two overall? And before we go any further, actually, I just wanted to comment that we are recording this around 9:30 p.m., which means the games that started at 7 p.m. tonight and have already gone final will be factored in. Games that started after 7:30, 8 o'clock tonight will not be factored into this list here.
Namely, Oregon, Arizona, a few others. Right. We did not consider those.
But we did consider the Iowa-Maryland game that just went final, the Cincinnati-UConn game and the likes. But so, David, yeah. Who's number two overall?
I know they lost just about an hour ago or so that game went final. I still have the Iowa Hawkeyes at number two.
John, do you agree with that?
I would not agree right now because of that loss. So I'm going to go with North Carolina in the number two slot.
I have Carolina right behind Iowa. I have North Carolina at number three. The difference for me is still the paper. Iowa has monster wins on the road. North Carolina does not. And I just, at the end of the day, don't think losing on the road to a top 10 team that, you know, has almost no home losses themselves is really a reason to move them below someone that has no road wins. Like, North Carolina hasn't beaten a team as good as Maryland on the road, so why move Iowa down because they lost? That's my thinking.
John, do you want to respond to that?
Oh, I'm still going to respond by saying that Carolina, while still undefeated in the ACC, is going to have a slight edge over Iowa, even though we are talking about overall body of work. But for the time being, I still feel confident in putting Carolina as my number two.
And where would you have Iowa? Would you have them number three?
I would have them number five.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, you have a huge difference there. Let me ask you that. Who are your two, three, and four if you're going to have Iowa down off the one line?
I have Carolina number two, obviously, but my next two teams are both going to come out of the Big East Conference, and I think you know the order in which I'm going to go.
St. John's followed by Marquette?
Yeah. I didn't have St. John's.
Go ahead. Xavier followed by Villanova, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah, Villanova number three, Xavier number four.
Oh, you have Villanova over Xavier.
Okay. Okay, we our top five are the same. I have Iowa number two, North Carolina number three. I have Xavier fourth, and the reason I have them ahead of Nova, they did lose to Nova, but it was at Villanova, and I realized they got curb stomped, but, you know, Xavier won at Providence. I don't think Nova has a true road win of that level yet. I think Xavier's overall body of work is ahead of Villanova, and again, they won at Providence, and Providence had won at Villanova. So, all things equal, I just like Xavier's overall body of work a little better, and I think their best win is a lot better than Villanova's best win.
Well, I'm trying to build a I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
I was going to say Villanova's best road win right now is at Seton Hall, and then
yes,
their next best road win would be at Butler.
Right, and I think Xavier winning at Providence, winning at Michigan, winning at I just think Xavier's road wins are a lot better.
And
I think
Xavier has the neutral court wins over Alabama, USC, and Dayton. I mean, Dayton is number 12 in the RPI right now, whether you think they deserve that or not. I am with David that I do like the Xavier profile better than Villanova. I am going to give North Carolina number two overall, simply because you both had them that high, followed by the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Xavier Musketeers. And then Villanova, I guess, would start at the two line. That's kind of where I'm thinking from what you've both said. I know that it's the same five teams. The big debate here is which of these five teams falls off the one line. For David, I guess for you it was Villanova, correct? That fell to
yes,
the two line.
Yeah, I have Villanova number five.
Right. John, you had Iowa falling down. I think the body of work and those road wins over top teams that Iowa has, you can't expect them to win every single one of these road games, and I can't punish them down off the one line for losing at Maryland. Whether you like Maryland's profile or not, they're a lot better than the profile because they haven't had the volume of games against top 10, top 15 teams that everybody else up here has had.
And I think the ironic part here is that Villanova would much prefer being the top number two seed and still get to stay at home as opposed to getting the booby prize, which would be the West Regional.
You're kind of right here. I mean, Villanova gets to play in the East Regional in this scenario and not have to go out to Anaheim. So I think you're very right about that. But let's finish off the two line here. David, why don't you give me your next three teams up that would finish off the two line along with Villanova?
I go back and forth in this. It doesn't feel right, and I sense dissension coming. Iowa State, I have them up here. I know they're not quite as good on the road, but they've done enough. I like West Virginia, too. And then I have Michigan State at number eight.
Okay. Iowa State, West Virginia, Michigan State. John, do you have a response to that?
I would agree only on one of those teams. So
which team is that?
I would agree that West Virginia should also be on the two line. But I would... I would still have Kansas and Virginia as my other twos, though.
It's kind of funny because personally, West Virginia is the one team I would not agree with either one of you on. But since they are your consensus, they end up in the number six spot overall, which I think is too high for them. But
I have Virginia way down simply because of how they've struggled in true road games. And when I say way down, I mean down on the four line, not down out of protected seed range.
And well, I will say this in response to Kansas, though, if we look at their overall body of work. Their win at San Diego State is suddenly looking better. I mean, they still have nice wins at home over Baylor, Oklahoma, Texas, and also neutral court wins in Maui against UCLA, Vanderbilt. And even the win at Texas Tech may carry a little bit of weight for the Jayhawks.
I think it does because Texas Tech is sort of a home court hero. I like Kansas. Kansas is number nine. I have them very close, and I went back and forth on them a lot. But Michigan State beat Kansas. I know Michigan State was kind of in a funk, but in being in that funk, they didn't really lose to anybody that was super terrible.
John, let me turn to you here on this. You have Kansas over both Iowa State and Michigan State, David's two teams, yet both those teams beat Kansas. So can you respond to that?
Again, I would talk about the overall body of work because Kansas at least did a bulk of their work before the Big 12 season. If we look at Iowa State, yes, they have wins over Oklahoma, Kansas, and Iowa, but
three top 10 wins.
The only other real notable win outside of that would be Chattanooga.
John, I got to take exception with you. I'm sorry. You can't say you beat three top 10 teams, but then qualify it with, but your only other win is. I mean, that's three top 10 wins. There's going to be very few teams in the country with three top 10 wins. But David, let me have you respond to the Kansas argument here. Is there a reason why you kept them off the two line?
Partly because of head-to-head, and I realize that those were road games for Kansas. Those aren't easy to win. I guess I'm just looking for a monster road win, and I'm not even seeing it. Like, they didn't win at Oklahoma State, whereas, Iowa State, I just think they've been a little bit weaker in true road games than the other two.
Well, their schedule has also been pretty front-loaded.
It has been, yeah.
So far.
John, I want to give you a chance to beat up on David a little bit here and address Michigan State, who had lost three out of their last four games, including a home loss to Tim Miles. And I know that David does not.
That's not a bad loss. You can't penalize them for losing to Tim Miles.
David, also the king of road wins, and the best true road win that Michigan State has right now was at Penn State. So do you want to take a little attack here on him on that?
Well, I would point out that if we look at Michigan State's five losses, two were against Iowa, or actually four losses. Let's not forget they also lose at Wisconsin, which typically that's a hard place to win, but this year has been about as easy as you'll get in terms of being able to win up in Madison, and the Spartans did not take advantage.
Yeah.
Okay. 1 second here, get this back up. Okay, what we've done, gone ahead is I've been convinced about the Iowa State argument. I'm going with Kansas as the 8 seed. I'm not convinced about Michigan State.
You're wrong. They beat Kansas.
I know they beat Kansas, but they lost to Nebraska, and when you lose to Nebraska...
Who coaches Nebraska?
But, John, let me turn to you here now for the three line. I know you like Virginia. We have not put them in the field, so give me three more teams to go along with the Cavaliers.
Okay, once we add Virginia, this is where I would add Michigan State. I would add Providence, then I would add Miami.
And Miami. Okay, David, I guess you like Michigan State here, but give me three more teams to go with them.
Yeah, I like Providence as well. Providence is a little bit odd. They have some head-scratching losses, but what's funny is that they're all at home. It seems like they're really good at the heavy lifting. I have Providence up here, a team that might surprise you that I have this high. I have Texas A&M all the way up here, and Maryland would be my fourth team on this line.
And you do not still have Virginia. Like you had, discussed you have the line lower. Well, let me start with the two consensus teams here. They'll take the top two spots, and those were Michigan State and Providence. And so our debate here on the other two spots are between Virginia and Miami, who are John's teams, Maryland and A&M, who are David's teams. David, I was all on board with you with the A&M thing until last night when they go out and lose in Arkansas. How can you defend them still being this high with that loss?
Because Arkansas is a home court hero. I mean, they're 8-2 at home. They've been playing really well at home. It's a game they should have won, but I just don't knock them too much. And again, they're at the bottom of my line, so they're not exactly – they're very close. I still have them very close to a 4. But I guess when thinking about it, it's just I know Arkansas is not a tournament team, but in that situation, they're still really hard to beat.
I'm going to go back to the Virginia profile here for a moment because we've already listed West Virginia as one of the number two seeds. Let's not forget that Virginia already beat the Mountaineers in Madison Square Garden, and they also have wins over Villanova, Miami, and to a lesser extent, Notre Dame and Cal. Texas A&M doesn't have anything to really match that.
Well, UConn.
Well, John, you don't have to convince me too much of Virginia because they are going in the 11th spot. I've already overruled David on that. I'd like you to address this Maryland team, John. Why you don't have them on the three line after this huge win tonight over Iowa?
Well, I had kind of a coin flip between Maryland and Miami, but when I look at Maryland, their best two wins are UConn and Iowa. Miami, they still have Duke, they have Utah on a neutral floor, and also Butler on a neutral floor back in the Puerto Rico tournament. That was my tiebreaker.
Now, but David, do you think he's ignoring Miami's loss? A couple of losses here at Clemson and, more importantly, home to Northeastern.
A little bit. I think the top of Miami's profile is certainly better. I like Miami a lot. I kind of went back and – I mean, I have them right next to each other, and I kind of went back and forth on them. I wasn't as big on Maryland or haven't been all year. In fact, this is the highest I've ever had them, and a lot of it had to do with them getting to win the night. I know they were at home, but you still got to give them credit for the win because of how good Iowa is on the road. That's what moved me ahead. I mean, I'm not one to give as much credit for home wins, but even if you're at home and you beat a team like Iowa that's very good on the road as well, That was the deal breaker for me. But they're close, and I went back and forth with both of them.
Well, I am going to give the slight edge to Maryland here. I think I'm slightly more convinced, and I think for me the tiebreaker is that loss to Northeastern for Miami. Maryland does not have that bad loss. Not that it's an awful loss, but it's at home to a team that's not going to be in the at-large candidates. So Maryland at number 12. Miami will start off our four line. And David, I know you like Texas A&M also on the four line. Why don't you give me your next two teams beyond A&M?
Again, you're going to be a little surprised because it is sort of a reverse of course, but I think both these
teams...
Yeah. Yeah. Both these teams, Baylor and Oregon, their profiles have the complexion of them have drastically changed, as has my opinion on them when they've gone out on the road and they've won, which both these teams have done. I have Baylor and then Oregon.
John, he has Baylor and Oregon. It's Texas A&M, Baylor and Oregon.
Yeah,
do you agree with those three to join Miami on the four line, or do you want to throw out some other teams?
I agree with them on two out of the three. I would have gone in this order: Texas A&M, Purdue, and then Oregon.
So Texas A&M and Oregon will both get the first two spots because those are consensus picks here. John, what don't you like about Baylor at this point?
Well, it's not so much what I don't like. I just like what Purdue has done slightly more. If I look at some of the notable wins for Baylor at Iowa State, which is a nice one to have in your pockets. Their other wins of note are Vanderbilt, Kansas State, and a buzzer beater at Texas Tech. What I like about Purdue a little bit more was winning at Pittsburgh, thrashing Michigan, and also getting wins against Vanderbilt, Florida on a neutral floor, and also at Wisconsin.
David, he's got a pretty good argument there. Can you want to take the Baylor side of the argument here?
Well, I mean, I have Purdue right behind Baylor. They're my next team in the line, so it's not that outrageous. I agree with what John said, but the tipping point to me was just that win at Iowa State and some of their other road wins. I just really, really like that. I think that's better than anything Purdue's done.
Purdue is 6-3 away from home, and Baylor is only 3-3 away from home. Chad?
My response is we've got Purdue on the four line and Baylor starting off the five line. And with that, John, let me stick with you here. Give me three more teams to join Baylor on the five line.
Okay, my next three, and we did allude to them a little bit earlier, I'll throw in Dayton, and then I'll go ahead and throw in Utah and Kentucky as my other fives.
Wow.
Okay, the Kentucky kind of surprised me this early.
Wow.
And I think David may be surprised by it as well. But David, give me your three teams to join Baylor.
I have Dayton. I didn't think anybody else would have them this high. I really like their paper, and I like their team. And I think that you have to give them a little credit for things that a lot of people probably won't. For instance, they won at St. Bonaventure. The Bonnies aren't a tournament team, but they're really tough at home. Fordham had a good home record. Dayton went in there and absolutely clobbered them. They've been playing very, very well. Not many people know that because they're buried on the A-10's crappy TV deal, but if you have a satellite dish the size of Rhode Island like we all do and you get the chance to see them play, they're actually pretty good. I like that pick. I just wanted to put that out there. I have...
And I love the Iowa win that they have a Dayton's profile and I do agree that I think they belong right there after Butler's. But go ahead, give me your next two beyond that.
I have USC. I know that they had a loss over the weekend, and I have Utah right behind them.
Okay, well, John also had Utah, so we're going to make Utah the 19 spot there. So our debate here is USC versus Kentucky. And let me start with you, John. Why not USC instead of Kentucky?
Well, I think I would probably go by overall record if we're looking for a tiebreaker between Kentucky and USC. I would still go with 16-4 and a respectable 6-2 in the SEC. I mean, a win against Duke on a neutral floor, even though the Blue Devils are not what we expected they would be, that's still a nice win to have in your back pocket, as is Louisville.
David, you want to respond about Kentucky?
Well, I just don't think that they have. Yeah, like you said, they have the win against Duke, but they don't really have much else. USC, they won at UCLA. I thought that that was a really good win. I know UCLA's probably down the list, but to go there and win on their home court is pretty impressive because UCLA's been tough at home. They actually beat Kentucky earlier this year. I don't penalize them too much. I know that they're coming off two losses to the Oregon schools, one pretty convincingly against Oregon State, but I still don't penalize them too much for that when you look at everything else they've done. Winning, they had the win against Monmouth. They had, like, the wins against the Arizona schools. I just like them a little better than Kentucky. And part of it, I'm just not that impressed with Kentucky. I know that they've had some really impressive wins lately, but, you know, to go to LSU and lose, I think losing at Oregon and Oregon State is a lot more forgivable than losing at LSU.
I think David was paying attention to the curtain of distraction just now. I mean, it will explain why Oregon State is getting killed tonight.
Yeah, it's hard to pay attention to profiles when you don't have any arms. It's hard to navigate.
I'm going to side with David here. I'm not impressed with this Kentucky team. They had one of their biggest wins of the season last night, but it was over Missouri, and you know, I mean, Rutgers would beat Missouri this season, so I'm
losing at Auburn. I mean, they've lost to teams that I think aren't as good as. And I hate to compare losses. I think USC's losses are a little more forgivable.
David, let me stick with you here, though. There's mention of Kentucky; they're not in yet. But give me your top four teams for the sixth line.
I know they're beat up with injuries, but I still like how they're playing. I have Arizona.
Okay.
Then I have Kentucky. This is about where I'd have them in. I didn't really react to this the way that they could, so I might need to revisit this. But my next two were Notre Dame and Texas.
Notre Dame and Texas. John, let me turn to you. I think there's a team that David, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned yet, but let me turn to John for his three to join Kentucky here.
Yeah, I think we can go ahead and put Kentucky and Arizona as consensus picks because I would agree on the Wildcats.
Okay, that's easy. That starts the sixth line.
And at this point, I would add Louisville and Notre Dame.
So it's also a consensus pick on Notre Dame, despite the loss tonight, albeit on the road against a red-hot team. So, John, you're going Louisville here for the fourth pick. David, you're going Texas, and let me just throw this out there. Neither one of you has mentioned the Colorado yet. David, it really surprised me you haven't mentioned them. Because I look at their profile, I see it very similar to Utah, USC, Arizona. I see all these profiles very similar looking, in my opinion.
I have them coming up, but I just didn't have them quite this high yet.
Okay.
John, but Louisville, I'm still not really sold on them.
John, why Louisville over Texas?
Well, in the case of Louisville, they've gone 6-1 in the ACC, and they've managed to win games at Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech, which I know doesn't sound like much on the surface, but a team like Virginia has not been able to accomplish either game. And let's not overlook wins like Florida State and Pittsburgh, where only Pittsburgh appears to be a surefire NCAA bid at this point. I would still have Florida State somewhere around the bubble.
Well, David, let me respond to that because I think there's a nice road win that Texas had that you may want to mention.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's one of the big ones, the one at West Virginia. And they also have notable wins. They beat North Carolina at home. Who was the other big one?
Iowa State at home.
Yeah, and Iowa State at home. I just think I think their road wins are better than Louisville's. I think their home wins are better than Louisville's. They do have some head-scratching losses, but nothing really terrible other than TCU, and that one's pretty bad. But overall, I just think Texas is better. I like them a lot, especially the way they're playing now, winning four of their last five in Big 12 play. I think they're going to blast Vanderbilt to the moon this weekend.
John, what about that fact that Texas did win at West Virginia? They also won at Stanford. They beat Washington on a neutral court, who's a team you've been high on for a while now. You know, isn't that better than Louisville's road wins?
Well, you're also overlooking another elephant, and that's North Carolina that they've beaten. But I think at the same time, I think one of the things that does concern me a little bit about Texas is the fact that they do have 7 losses on their profile, including a 3-6 overall record away from home. I mean, I know winning at West Virginia is a big win, but there's still a little bit of work that the Longhorns still need to do.
Well, I am going to go with Texas here. That West Virginia win just stares at me, plus 2 top 10 wins with Iowa State and North Carolina, better than the Louisville profile. Louisville, John, give me 3 teams that would join Louisville for you, though, on the 7 line at this point.
In addition to Louisville, this is where I would add Seton Hall, Michigan, and Duke.
Seton Hall, Michigan, and the Blue Devils that are not from Central Connecticut State. Okay, David, why don't you give me your top 4 teams here?
Okay, they are not Louisville. They are Michigan, Duke, Pittsburgh, who I know Louisville beat, and Seton Hall. So we have 3 of the 4 same teams.
And so you're still not here on Colorado yet, huh?
Not yet. They're next.
Okay. So Michigan, Seton Hall, and Duke are actually Michigan, Duke, and Seton Hall are the consensus picks to come in here for the top 3 spots of the 7 line. And that leaves us with one more spot. And now we're going back to the Louisville debate. We don't really need to look at Louisville's profile as much. But, John, let me have you address the Pittsburgh profile and why you like Louisville better than that profile.
I think Louisville's been far more consistent than Pittsburgh lately. I mean, I know losing a Clemson is not as much of a crime as we thought it would be earlier in the year, but losing to NC State, there's no excuse for that one that I can think of.
It was a bad, ugly loss, and plus they lost head-to-head to Louisville, David.
Yeah, so that okay, let's go with Pittsburgh.
I'm going to have to side with John on this head-to-head. And that was a very bad loss there, that NC State home loss. A home loss by 17 points. It was probably worse than that.
Yeah.
I also want to go back briefly to Seton Hall. I want to make a motion right now that their throwback uniforms become permanent.
David, do you second the motion?
Yes, yes. Okay. They need to become permanent. Those are pretty sweet.
That has been taken care of, Seton Hall. But Seton Hall is in at number 27 overall, only if they wear the throwback uniforms. Okay, David, why don't you give me your – watch it. We know you like Pitt. They haven't gone in, so give me 3 teams to join Pitt.
Colorado, right, who we've talked about already a little bit. I go back and forth with this team, especially after they did not get the win at Creighton like they need to. But I have Butler this high, and this is where I have South Carolina as well.
Okay, you have Butler and South Carolina along with Colorado. And Pitt. John, why don't you give me your 4 teams here?
Okay, I would agree with you with 3 out of those 4 teams right there. I agree that Butler, South Carolina, and Pittsburgh are on this line, but this is where I would also add the Indiana Hoosiers.
Okay, so we've got agreement here with Butler, Pittsburgh, South Carolina. Where we do not have the agreement, though, is now it is a Colorado versus Indiana debate. And David, why Colorado over Indiana?
Indiana, I mean, they have a lot of wins, but none of them are of real substance. They're against, at best, decent teams, no real good wins. When they played a good win in their last game, they did not win it. They didn't win at Wisconsin. And then when you look at Colorado, you know, they have Oregon State, Oregon. The one knock is that they haven't played a lot of road games lately, but they did get the win at Stanford. They won, albeit at Colorado State earlier in the year. The Iowa State loss at the beginning of the year you don't really hold that against them, even though it was a neutral court. I just like them slightly better than Indiana because at least they've beaten teams that are solidly in the field, whereas Indiana has not.
Yeah, and John, looking at the profiles here, Indiana has losses to Wake Forest, Wisconsin, and UNLV, which will not be in the field here tonight. When you look at Colorado's profile, the only loss to a team that's not going to be definitely not going to be in the field here tonight. I know there'll be debates with Cal and Washington, but is SMU, who can't be in the field tonight, but is definitely a quality loss. So, John, why Indiana over Colorado?
They both have 5-4 records away from home, but if we're talking about the best win away from home, I give Indiana the edge since they've beaten Notre Dame.
Neutral court Notre Dame, though. And Notre Dame team that got spanked tonight at Syracuse.
Colorado's best win away from home, I would probably say, is at Stanford, which is not a team I would have in my field quite yet. But they do have a sweep over the Cardinal now, so there is that.
Sweep over the Cardinal and a nice home win over an Oregon team that's playing better and better as playing Arizona real close right now as we record this. I am going to go with Colorado here. I think it is a close call, but I'm going to go with David this time. And, John, let me stick with you. Besides Indiana, give me three more teams with the 9 line.
Okay, this is going to be the non-major line for me behind Indiana. This is where I would go with Monmouth, VCU, and St. Joe's.
Hold on. St. Joe's and VCU. David, give me your four teams here.
Well, I don't have Indiana on this line either. I have, in this order, VCU, because of how well they're playing. I have St. Joe's, so I agree with those two. And I realize that this might be, when you look at their overall paper, this might seem a little high. But when you consider that they only have one loss at full strength all season, I have Wichita State all the way up here. I think they're blowing through a conference that's, while not good, still hard to blow through, especially when you're on the road. I think they look amazingly good right now. I think there's one of those teams that is so much better than their paper that whoever they face in the tournament better watch out. I have them all the way up here.
That's three teams, I believe. So we gave me VCU, St. Joe's, and Wichita. Did you have Indiana here as well?
No, I had Valpo. Is the other one. I'm sorry.
Okay. We have a consensus here on VCU and St. Joe's. John is leaning towards Indiana Monmouth. David, you're going with a couple other under-the-radar-ish schools in Wichita and Valpo. Let me just throw this out there for both of you before we go any further. John, let me start with you. After what they did tonight, dominating win over Notre Dame, did you consider Syracuse as high?
I did move them up a little bit, but I didn't move them up quite to the 9 line yet. But I also have them stuck behind a mishmash of a lot of Pac-12 teams.
Wow. I thought I had Syracuse high. They're in my field. I thought I had them high where I had them. I didn't have them this high.
I just wanted to throw that out there. So, David, let me stick with you here now. You've already told us why you don't like Indiana. Why? And I'm crazy that I'm asking this question. Why do you think Monmouth is lower than this? given your position on Monmouth all year, it's kind of a crazy question to be asking.
I don't have them much lower. Once this line is set, we'll explain what a first ballot team means because this is the last line of the 36. Monmouth has a lot of good on their profile. But I guess when I look at the three sub-200 losses, I think they're inside the bubble, but Valpo's avoided those kinds of losses, and although they don't have as many wins, they do have some good ones. They won at Rhode Island, who isn't a tournament team, but it's hard to win there. They won at Oregon State. They won big at Oakland. I think Valpo's just a little bit better, and That's really the anchor for me. I have Monmouth very, very close to this line, but the three losses are what compelled me to move them down a little bit.
Mr. Sherwood?
Yes.
I would also like to point out, and I say this as a Xavier fan, we saw a team like Xavier had a lot of stinkers last year, but they did manage to get a 6th seed, although it took quite a few wins at the end of the year.
But you're talking about Big East versus Metro Atlantic, and there is something there. But John, I'd rather have you address Wichita State at this point, because why would you not have Wichita State this high? Are you still penalizing them for those losses with Van Vliet? And do they deserve to be penalized for those? without FanFleet.
I don't know if you penalize them for the losses so much as the only real wins of note that they have, which would be Utah, Evansville, and I think UNLV would be the third best win that they have. I mean, yes, they'll get points if they run the table in the Mountain West, but we're only halfway home right now. No,
if they run the table,
Chad, you've made a mistake. You put Indiana on this line. You've made a mistake.
We've made the decision here, finishing out the dialogue with Indiana and Wichita State, and we did want to take a quick break here, David, to discuss what it means to be a first ballot team. And in fact, I'm going to refresh the screen while you do that. So why don't you tell us what it means to be a first ballot team, what the significance of being on the top nine lines is?
Now, before we get to that, we also made another mistake in regards to Wichita State. They are no longer under the radar since they are now in the top 25. Am I right?
That's correct. And we did not discuss them last night either. So, yes. David, go ahead.
So as a procedure, there are 10 selection committee members, and there's some exceptions to this, but essentially they vote for up to 36 teams. Any team that gets 8 votes, so 8 of the 10 members vote for them, they're placed in the field. And these are teams that are in the field no matter what. So when they sit down to meet, no matter what happens in the conference tournaments, these are teams that they feel should be in the field. So everybody, like I said, the teams that receive 8 out of 10 votes are in the field. They then continue to vote until they get to 36 teams. And that is what we mean by first ballot. There are 36 at-large bids. And so these are teams that are going to be in the field no matter what. Every time one of the 36 teams wins an automatic bid, wins a conference championship, they vote another team in. So that is the significance of the top nine lines. It means they are the ones that will get in no matter what. Now, realistically, what are the chances that none of the 36 teams would win conference tournaments? It's virtually zero, so other bids would open up. But this is where we... This is what we refer to as first ballot teams, the top 36.
And if you look at the top 36 here, we could see that we actually have 8 at-large spots remaining here. That means that 8 different conferences have already been represented. Presuming that the highest-rated team on our field here is going to get the automatic bids, we've opened up 8 spots already for more teams.
Right.
And we may be more than that because 2 of the teams that we're seriously discussing for the 10 line here are going to be Monmouth and Valpo, which would be the first team from their respective conferences, so that wouldn't actually take an at-large spot off the board.
Yeah. Let me also add one other note to the first ballot discussion that David had pointed out. This would not include teams that would already have won their automatic bids when we make that vote, because this would probably include Wichita State and whoever wins the West Coast Conference, although they're not really going to be first ballot quality at this point.
Yeah, the first ballots are generally made about a week before Selection Sunday, the initial ballots, and then at the first meeting, like probably on the Wednesday or Thursday night of Selection Week, they will fill out to 36 spots. So those are the first ballot scenarios, and like John said, Wichita State may already be in at that point. The West Coast Conference champion will be in. Monmouth presumably might be in by then. Valpo could be in by then. But let's go on here, though. John, let me go back to you. I know you like Monmouth. Give me 3 more teams that join them on the 10 line.
In addition to Monmouth, I have one big mover based on tonight's action, and that would be not Syracuse, but the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Okay.
Cincinnati, I would have Clemson, and this is my Wyoming equivalent this year, the Washington Huskies.
Okay, John, you like Washington, Monmouth, Cincinnati, and Clemson, not exactly in that order. But David, I know you like Valpo, who John has not even put in yet. Give me 3 teams to go with Valpo, though.
The team you mentioned earlier, I have Syracuse, and I thought I had them super high, putting them on the 10 line, followed by Monmouth. And I know this is going to sound crazy. I had UCLA all the way up here. And there are reasons to not have UCLA in the field at all. They're real schizophrenic. Their profile is all over the place. But I guess today the good on their profile caught my eye more than the bad.
We've got a lot of differences here. I think this is the first time we've only had one team we've agreed on, which is Monmouth. David, you're liking UCLA, Valpo, and Syracuse at best of these 3. John leaning towards Cincinnati, Clemson, and Washington. John, let me start with you. Why not UCLA? Why Washington over UCLA? Two Pac-12 schools. Let's start with that.
Well, I mean, for one thing, Washington already has a head-to-head win over UCLA, so they're still 5-2, which makes them, I think, for the time being, one of the co-leaders in the Pac-12. I also want to add, in relation to Clemson and Syracuse, the Orange are 4-5 in the ACC right now to go with their 14-8 overall record. Clemson is 6-2, and that includes a win at Syracuse, so they're not just racking wins only in Greenville.
Now, John, I actually was watching an interview with the committee chair earlier this week, Joe Castiglione. And
not that we care, but...
Not that we care too much, but he made the comment that basically that a team being without a coach for a period of time is going to be treated very similar to a team being without a player. Obviously, referring to Syracuse.
That is absolutely idiotic. But...
Syracuse here, but... Do you not give Syracuse a little bit of leeway because of the 9 games without Boeheim?
I give them a little leeway, but I would still give Clemson a thumbs up in terms of overall profile. But also keep in mind what's really holding Clemson down from moving up further in this list are losses at Minnesota and also a neutral court loss versus UMass in Las Vegas.
David, let me turn to you now. Let's start with the Pac-12 argument first, then we'll do the ACC. Why UCLA over Washington?
Well, I because of UCLA's wins, because of the good on their profile, I think UCLA's good is better, and I think their bad is worse. You could go either way. I mean, when a team is as schizophrenic as UCLA has been, what do you really do with them? But I just think that they've the good things that they've done are better than what Washington has done.
Okay. And how about the Clemson versus...
I had Clemson on the next line, which is the 11 line, and I wasn't sure if you or John would even have them in at all. I agree with what John said. I agreed with their assessment of them, and I thought I was ready to argue. That's why I had them on the 11. I thought I'd have to argue them into the field, so... I was kind of surprised that John mentioned Clemson. Cincinnati also on my next line. So although it doesn't sound like there's a consensus here, at least on my seed list, we're not that far off. We're still within one line of it. I like Clemson. I just didn't like them as much because I think they're so – I mean, a lot of things on Clemson's smoke profile still smell really bad. I think they're playing great ball now. I think they'll continue to improve their profile if they keep going like they are, and they'll probably by the end of it end up inside the bubble a lot further than the 11 line, but for now, that's where I still have them.
Well, I'm going to start by putting this Valpo team in, and I'm going to... I think the Clemson-Syracuse arguments were pretty good. I think I'm a little more impressed with them over the Washington-UCLA ones. So we're going to go after Valpo, Syracuse, and then Clemson to finish out the 10 line. I'll tell you that personally, I would not even have Clemson in this field, but given that both of you did and both of you gave pretty good arguments for them, whether I agree with it or not, there they are. Cincinnati, obviously, you both agree with as well, and they're going to start out the 11 line. And the teams that have not gotten in actually at this point are the two Pac-12 teams that we discussed, Washington and UCLA. But, John, I know you like Washington. Why don't you give me two more to go with them to finish out the 11?
After Washington, this is where I would add UCLA, and then I would add the Connecticut Huskies.
Okay, and then the UConn Huskies. David, would you put Washington at this point or to go with UCLA or –
No, I have, and again, I'm going to have to get the battle gear out here. I have Little Rock up here.
Okay.
And you kind of have to look at it. They have a really bloated record. They have a lot of decent wins. I know that they're lacking in ones that are actually good, but I think the win at Arlington was big. Arlington had been really tough at home. I think you got to give them some credit for that. God. Having trouble here, a little technical difficulties.
Okay, John, John, yes. do you want to address it while he gets his issues resolved there?
Yes.
John, do you want to address Little Rock?
Little Rock, I probably would have had right above the first four, and I think part of that was because of their loss to Arkansas State a couple weeks ago. I mean, they still have wins over San Diego State and Texas Arlington that hold a little bit of weight, and then Tulsa, they're kind of teetering, but I still like what Washington has done better in terms of, let's say, wins over USC, Colorado, Texas on a neutral floor, and also a win over Arizona State.
Yeah, Little Rock went through a stage to where they played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 11 games away from home, and they won 10 of them. The one loss was Texas Tech. I just think that I realize that, like, there isn't any big-time wins there, but I think that there's a lot of decent wins. I think the win at San Diego State is really good. I think the win at Arlington was really good. And as an aside, I just think this is a really good basketball team that isn't going to get the credit for it, partly because their situation doesn't allow them to demonstrate it. But with the exception of the loss to Arkansas State, they've really been playing really well in their games.
David, who's next going to be after Little Rock, just so I can get one other team here?
I said Cincinnati already. Florida State was my next one, and then Connecticut.
Okay. Well, let's start with this here. John has convinced me on Washington. I am starting to join his bandwagon there. Little Rock being our other team to finish.
Why is Washington?
Little Rock is the other team there. David, you've mentioned Florida State. John, you've mentioned UConn. David, before we go on to the 12 line, actually, as we sit here right now, we have four at-large bids remaining. That means our next four teams will be the first four unless we put another automatic bid in there, which I'm specifically looking at you, the West Coast Conference. But, David, why not UConn yet?
They just don't have anything. Losing at home tonight, I actually moved them down a little further. I have them in. They're in my first four.
Okay, you do have them in. So you have that Florida State and UConn actually for your next two then?
Yes.
Okay, John, your next two will be UConn and who else?
Now, I was going to also add a little footnote. If we were going to talk about an auto bid winner, I would have put Chattanooga before I would St. Mary's, but I would not have either one above the first four quite yet.
Okay, well, what I'm asking, we're going to get there in a little bit here, but let's stick with who your next team is after UConn.
After UConn, this is where I go Florida, Florida State, and as my final bubble team, the Temple Owls.
Okay, John, you're going Florida, Florida State. You've both gone UConn and Florida State, so Connecticut and Florida State are both in as a consensus here. David, he went Florida and Temple to finish out his field. Without putting a West Coast Conference team in. So, David, give me your two teams here.
Oregon State and Stanford.
You're going Oregon State and Stanford. Now,
yes.
So at this point, neither of you is going with a West Coast Conference team.
You said, okay, my next two are Oregon State and St. Mary's.
Okay, Oregon State and St. Mary's and then Stanford.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm not a big – let me just make this point real quick, if I may. I'm not a big St. Mary's fan. I don't like that they didn't play any road games, and I just want to point out that I still have them ahead of Gonzaga. I am not big on the Zags.
All right. So, John, do you agree that St. Mary's is the better team over Gonzaga?
Yes, I would agree, especially with the head-to-head win.
Okay, so St. Mary's will be here on the 12 line, whether at 47, 48, or 49. We're going to get to that in a second. So the question here is going to be, David wants Stanford and Oregon State. John, you want Florida and Temple.
What I really want is a 64-team field.
David, let me have you address Florida.
No bad losses. They've looked good eye test-wise, but where are the wins? I guess they're just not there. They've had several chances, and they've failed all of them. The best thing I can say for Florida is that they've beaten the teams they're supposed to beat. But that's not really good enough. You know, at least Oregon State has beaten somebody. At least Stanford has beaten somebody. I had Florida a little bit down. You know, my next teams were – I had George Washington and San Diego State in front of them. I had them right behind that. So I have them somewhat close. They would be in my next four out. But the reason I don't have them higher is because there's just no wins.
John, let me have you address those two Pac-12 teams and why you think Florida is better than those two teams. And then we'll get to Temple in a minute, but let's start with Florida versus those two teams.
I mean, if I look at what Florida's done, their win against St. Joe's is the best one they have, and then they also have wins against Richmond, Georgia, LSU, at Ole Miss, and Auburn. While they may not be NCAA caliber, I would still say they are NIT caliber. And if we look at what Oregon State has done, really their four best wins have all come at home: Oregon, Cal, USC, and Iona. Stanford, they do at least have the win at Oregon State to help them a little bit. That also goes with wins with California, Arizona State, and Oregon State. And let me tell you why I put Temple in.
Yeah, I want to get to that also. That's kind of the other team we got to discuss.
Yeah, because they do have the season sweep over Cincinnati, which is a big trump card. They have the first win against SMU this year, which is a huge trump card. And they still have the win at UConn, so they've done all the heavy lifting in the American.
David, do you want to address Temple and what they did the other night?
I'd rather not. It's too – well, that's why I don't have them in. I mean, I think I had Temple so far out before they did the things that John said. And then as they're winning that, I'm like, they're really coming down the stretch. We're going to have to start to seriously look at them. And then when we looked at them, they lost to – was it East Carolina?
At East Carolina, yeah.
I just think that – exactly. I will say this, Chad. I'm about to do something completely out of character. John has changed my mind on Florida. I would move them ahead of Oregon State.
Well, I have actually already –
I do not change my mind.
Florida and Stanford being our last two teams in, St. Mary's in there as well as the auto bid winner. Oregon State is going to be our top team that did not make the field, along with Temple. I want to discuss a few other teams that did not make this field, and let's start with the huge glaring omission here. Where are the Gonzaga Bulldogs?
Down.
Neither of you even had them in the field, correct?
I did not.
Okay.
Really, Gonzaga's best win is against UConn. I mean, other than that, they do have the win against Washington down in Atlantis. But below that, you have to look at Washington State and Tennessee away from home. They're nice, but that's not going to be good enough right now to get over the bump.
Here are some categorical things, Chad. I got Gonzaga's profile up here. Let me see if I can – I don't know why I'm having so much trouble tonight. Let's see. There it is. Okay. RPI of 70, that's historically low. Now, teams have gotten in with an RPI that low inside the bubble, but that's still pretty bad. Strength of schedule, 99, not really tough. Top 50 wins, there really aren't that many. Where is that? Yeah, they're 3-1, but they just don't really they just don't have it. Like John said, their best win is against Connecticut, and that's really the only thing they've done. And look at some of the games that they've dropped. I mean, I just don't have them. I think St. Mary's is actually better than them this year. They're one of the bigger disappointments of the season, I believe.
Let's mention a few other teams that did not make this field here, other than Oregon State, Temple, and Gonzaga. John, were there any other teams that you considered that you know, your top few teams out?
Well, I'm going to take George Washington off here because right now they're losing pretty badly at home to Richmond.
Okay.
Actually, my first two teams that are just on the outside looking in would be Creighton and Georgetown, and this is because they've gotten some notable wins in the Big East. Creighton has won at Seton Hall. They've also beaten Butler. But they did beat Georgetown and Omaha. And then the Hoyas, as we discussed last week, they got a big win at Xavier, which vaults them right back into the discussion. And they also have wins over Syracuse, Creighton, and Marquette and Wisconsin are starting to lose a little bit of steam.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Now, David, I want to see if there's any other teams that you thought were pretty close that we haven't discussed.
I have one that I think that's playing really well now, and if they keep it up, and by keep it up, I mean win out, I think San Diego State can still get inside the bubble. I had them real close. I know they have.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, San Diego State is actually in this field of the 12 line as the auto bid winner from the Mountain West. So
okay, yeah. I have them really close. Other teams, I realize that it's just really unfortunate their situation is that they just don't have the chance to make their profile look any better. But I like this Chattanooga team. I like them a lot more when they were at full strength, but they've still managed to win all their games without them. If they win out, I think that we should look at them. But the problem is they're not going to get any better than they already are. But we talked about how much we liked Dayton. They went to Dayton and won. That's a better win than most of the teams on the bubble will manage. And, yeah, they have some losses, but they're not really too, too bad, I don't think. Cal, that's another team we didn't put in. I just think they're awful on the road. I had them pretty far out. We talked about this the other night, Chad, but this next line down I have Hawaii and UC Irvine in reverse order, UC Irvine, then Hawaii. Yeah. And I think if one or both of them went out, you're looking at being on the bubble and maybe just in it.
Okay. A couple other teams that we have. One other team that I think there's probably two other teams actually that I want to very briefly mention, neither of you brought up. First of all, Texas Tech. John, is there any case to still be made for Texas Tech, or are they done?
I wouldn't say they're done completely yet because they've had a schedule that's been pretty front-loaded in terms of what they've played in the Big 12. I mean, their losses would include Iowa State on the road, Oklahoma on the road, Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia at home. But they're going to have to get a win, notable win, somewhere.
And David, one other team here, sitting at 6-2 in the SEC, now only a game out of first place. What about LSU?
I had them... let me see. I had them right behind San Diego State. I think they're playing much, much better now. But, again, they were so bad out of conference that they just haven't, in my opinion, done enough to make up for it yet. If they keep going like they've been going, I'm not counting them out of the picture at all. And the SEC with A&M, Kentucky, Florida, they're going to get the opportunities to get inside the bubble if they really belong there.
All right,
I also wanted to rewind back to Creighton a little bit. I was going to say earlier, if not for their late collapse against Georgetown, they would have been my last team in instead of Temple.
I would have certainly liked them a lot more had they held on to win that game.
Because they would have had a sweep of Georgetown had they managed to hold.
Well, let's go back here. We're gonna hit the magic button here, actually, for a second here. We're going to show the rest of the field. Okay, at the 13 line, just real quickly here, the Hawaii team that David mentioned, followed by the Chattanooga team you both mentioned, UAB and Hofstra, who's now the leader in the Colonial after James Madison lost at home tonight. The 14 line, Belmont, Stony Brook, Kent State, and South Dakota State. 15 line, North Florida, Yale, Montana, and Asheville. 16s, SFA, New Mexico State, avoiding the first four. Bucknell, Hampton, Wagner, and Texas Southern in the first four. Yeah. I know we already discussed Hawaii and Chattanooga a bit. David, anybody else in this group that you want to specifically note anything about?
Let me see. Not really. South Dakota State's been kind of disappointing. I thought they had the talent to get inside the bubble, but they've just kind of stubbed their toes a little too much. I do think that Hofstra team, whoever comes out of the Colonial, and we discussed this last night, I think that's a very dangerous matchup for whoever they would end up facing on the four line. And if someone runs away from the Colonial, and I mean runs away from it, we might start looking at them as an at-large. But that's a dangerous 13 seed. I'm not as big on UAB. I know that they've racked up a lot of wins. They went to Western Kentucky tonight and lost, but they've done it against a 290-ish strength of schedule. I don't know how dangerous they're going to be if they get out there against a four seed, but I do think in looking at that list, on the 13 line, you got Hawaii, you got Chattanooga, who's done it, and you've got Hofstra that can do it. I think that those are really tough matchups for the four seeds.
The Colonial is number 9 overall in the RPI, when I saw on Warren's webpage, so that's not a conference you're going to run away from.
Right.
And even the Summit League, I think, was number 11 or number 12. They were right above the Mountain West, so I'm not going to penalize South Dakota State too much for not running away from that league.
Well, on that note, we do have the bracket here. What's going to happen now is we're going to get this bracket, this seed list bracketed. If you look down below us, you can see that. If you look up above us, you can see how to click on the petition for the Lopes, who should be there instead of New Mexico State on that field.
Right.
But let's go to any final thoughts here. John, let me start with you. Any final thoughts about this bracket or anything else that we've been discussing tonight?
I haven't had a chance to sign your petition yet, but I would also explain that we would also be opening the doors to other worthy teams like UMass Lowell and Carnegie and who else? Oh, yeah, Abilene Christian, besides our Grand Canyon Antelopes.
David, any final thoughts from you?
Not much. A lot's going to change between now and the end. A lot of the questions that we have about teams like Louisville, Washington, they're going to get their chances to make their statement. So, it works the same no matter who you are. This was more of sort of an under-the-radar thought. I kind of hate it when you see good teams from weak leagues that don't get the chances to improve their profiles the way the Power Five conferences do and the way the Big East, the Atlantic 10 and the American do. So when you get a situation of a team like Monmouth, all they can really do from January on is hope to not damage their profile and hold serve. I would like it. I know they don't. I would like for the committee to kind of consider the situations teams are in when they make their picks, but I know that they don't.
Right. Well, at least the last 10 stat is no longer on there. Maybe that would have helped Monmouth. Maybe it would have hurt them, but really just did that. Thankfully, that's no longer the consideration they're supposed to give any special credit to.
And I know I zapped Monmouth a little bit. Yeah, but you like them out of conference, and then they lose in conference, and you're like, well, they lost to a weak conference. Well, they won their out-of-conference game, so that should tell you something.
Yeah, Monmouth, we discussed them in the under-the-radar. They're probably out of strikes, though. But sorry, John, one more comment from you?
Yeah, I was going to say the Metro Atlantic is actually 20th in the RPI, so that's also going to be a strike against Monmouth.
Mm-hmm. But on that note, though, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs, John Stalica, I'm Chad Sherwood. Sign the petition, check out the bracket,
the petition.
And we'll talk to you again next week.